Because everything in Hollywood must be revived these days, the Animaniacs are back after being locked in that Warner Studio water tower for more than 20 years. Led by the fictional siblings Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, the super meta cartoon featured slapstick humor and cultural references that appealed to both kids and adults alike. Hulu has released a new batch of episodes, and much of the original voice cast returns, though this time around you should expect fewer Goodfellas jokes and more cracks about presidential elections. I'm Aisha Harris, and it's time for Animaniacs on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me from her home in Boston is Margaret H. Willison, who is one half of the Two Bossy Dames newsletter and one third of the Appointment Television podcast. Welcome back, Margaret. It's great to see you.
Hi, Aisha. It's great to be here.
And also here from his home in Washington, D.C., we have J.C. Howard, a producer of NPR's TED Radio Hour and How I Built This. Welcome, J.C.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yes, it's awesome to have you here. So in 1993, the cartoon Animaniacs premiered on Fox, and it was zany to the max. The very loose premise of the original Animaniacs is that Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, voiced by Rob Paulsen, Jess Harnell, and Tress MacNeille, are cartoon siblings of an undetermined species that are created by animators in the 1930s. They're a little too wild for this world and are kept locked in a water tower on the Warner Brothers studio lot. And in each episode, they manage to break free and appear in sketches and segments alongside other recurring characters like Pinky and the Brain and Slappy the Squirrel. Now, the show is a spiritual successor to the Looney Tunes and was executive produced by Steven Spielberg, and it ran a total of 5 seasons in its original incarnation. Now, for the Hulu reboot, Spielberg is on board again, though in place of creator Tom Ruger, this new version is being led by Wellesley Wild, a frequent collaborator of Seth MacFarlane, and Tom Minton, whose resume includes work on the 80s cartoon Alvin and the Chipmunks, which was a show I loved when I was a kid. So... yeah. JC, let's actually start with you. What do you think of this new reboot of Animaniacs?
Well, first of all, I liked it. I mean, I have to imagine I'm just one of many millennials that watched Animaniacs every day after school, as well as its sister show, Tiny Toons. It's another one that I loved. So to prepare for our conversation, I did something that was honestly not at all a chore. I watched some of the episodes from the old 90s series, because as you said, in the age of reboots, which we are in now, I think comparison is always the elephant in the room and it has to be addressed. So thinking back to the old show and having rewatched some of the episodes, that version always struck me as kind of, I guess I describe it as like sneakily educational, if that makes sense. Like you had geography lessons peppered in, Einstein's theory of relativity, like Clinton jokes, all kinds of just random trivia that kids might have been exposed to at that time. And overall, I think both the original and the reboot, the show has always had this kind of quality, as you've said, of mixing silly slapstick humor with really adult humor. And by adult, I don't mean dirty or anything, just, you know, a little bit more complex than a kid would usually be used to getting from a cartoon. But in the old show, it really was kind of a mix of those things, a quick joke for the parent. And then, like, right behind that, Wakko takes a pie in the face for the 7-year-old in the family.
Very Three Stooges. Yeah.
Very Three Stooges. That's right. But in this reboot, I felt like it leans pretty heavily on the more complex stuff, which I personally kind of appreciate because it feels like the show isn't just stuck in, like, just a new version of the 90s show, but it's actually in the 20 some odd years it's been off the air, it's grown up with me and can keep me as a 30-year-old saying, okay, now that's funny. You know, for folks like myself, I think it definitely has that nostalgia feel, but it isn't all nostalgia. It has some like truly up to the minute political humor. So for the people who are around in the 90s, I think there's a ton to enjoy about it, but I wonder honestly if, you know, millennial parents introducing the show to their kids, will the children lose interest even sooner than the parents? Like, how many of these jokes will actually land with the kid of today? Mm-hmm.
That's a very good question. Margaret, what do you think about the show? Do you agree with JC or do you land a little bit more on the other side of things?
I think JC made a ton of points that I agree with very wholeheartedly, and especially the question of, like, is this going to work with kids? The first scene that we have is a spoof of Jurassic Park, complete with animated Steven Spielberg himself rolling through. And I was like, okay, so this is talking to me a 35-year-old woman. Yeah. Very directly. It's like, hi, I am watching your show. Thank you. Right. And appropriately enough, given that meta humor is a real focal point and trademark of the show, there is something meta in that, because very shortly after that, they have one of the Warner Brothers swallow an iPad. I think they have to call it a tablet so that we get that fun pun situation. And then, you know, suddenly have modern pop culture references. So it's thoughtful in that respect, but I do think it is leaning a little hard on the referential humor and not delivering as much of the just like zany, fun slapstick that I remember. And I couldn't tell watching this. It felt like a very loyal recreation of the original show's whole vibe and aesthetic. And I couldn't tell if it wasn't quite working for me because I'm not a child anymore, right? Or if it wasn't quite working for me because it wasn't quite as good. And then one more thing I'll say is that I don't know that I have the capacity to have as full a critical opinion of this as I'd like to, because the only non-Animaniacs recurring segments our preview bundle showed were ones of Pinky and the Brain. And I understand why they made that choice, because Pinky and the Brain is one of the most standout of their sort of rotating cast of extra segments. Right. But I would have loved to see if they were bringing any of the other ones back, or what they had created that was new, because some of those segments were a little bit more pure slapstick comedy. Yeah. And it would have been fun to kind of see if that was part of the package they wanted to present.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was one of the things that really struck me about watching this new version of the show, which is that Pinky and the Brain, for me at least, can only do so much. And it was probably one of my least favorite segments of the original Animaniacs. I was way more of a Goodfeathers segment lover.
Rita and Runt were really big for me.
Rita and Runt.
I love Buttons and Mindy.
Yes. And Slappy the squirrel, the elderly squirrel who's like iconic. Sassy. Like, I loved all of those characters. So I think like it's interesting to make that choice. If I recall correctly, Pinky and the Brain actually was so popular at the time that it got its own spinoff show. Yes, I understand why they did that. But to me, that lack of variety combined with so much heavy politics, and I understand they do maintain that meta air that they always had from the beginning of the show. Yeah. I, like JC, went back and rewatched some of the earlier episodes, and it was just so smart in the way they satirized things that went completely over my head as a kid. Right. And rewatching it now, I think I actually appreciate the show more. Mm-hmm. I rewatched one episode where Wacko, Yakko, and Dot were trying to help Michelangelo, who's like playing this like basically this like beefy Schwarzenegger type guy, repaint the Sistine Chapel. And there's like an entire 30 seconds of just Cole Porter jokes that, like, as a 5-year-old, I like, would never have gotten them. But then, you know, now that I'm watching, I'm like, oh, they just did an entire like pun on Cole Porter lyrics. Yeah. And I love that. And here we just get a lot of like, okay, we've been locked in the vault for 20 years. The world has changed significantly. Now, how do we deal with that? And how we deal with that is a lot of Clinton jokes, which, this time around, it's Hillary, it's not Bill.
Right.
But there's lots of Clinton jokes, a lot of Trump jokes. There's an entire segment about the election season. And there was way less politics in the original version. And I understand the conundrum of, like, how do you not address this moment? It's hard to do that. But what made Animaniacs so special, I think, and kind of predated the era that we're in now, is that they were unabashed in just like going for everything, like covering every sort of genre and culture, whether it's Broadway or old movies, and satirizing Warner Brothers cartoons. Mm-hmm. All of that seems to be missing here in favor of just like really focusing on just politics. And I wish it was a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
I have a niche but vicious burn, which is that while watching these episodes, the thing that was coming to mind for me the most was the premiere of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, where like the wildly funny thing these incredibly accomplished comedy writers decide to do is like a Gilbert and Sullivan rewritten song. It's just like, oh my God, the greatest comedy writers in the world have come up with this brilliant satire. It had that same sort of like musty educational and like we're not quite getting there with the funny. We've got all of the references. I see all of your references. I don't know if what you've created with them is doing very much for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there is certainly no shortage of pointed social commentary in the Animaniacs. and you know, that's something that was there from the beginning as well. But it really does take it to a whole new level. Like, there's this whole cartoon metaphor about gun control, which is like, you know, it takes over an entire bunnies. Segment of the show. Yes, with bunnies. Yes, it's it is pretty on the nose, I will say. But I will say one of the episodes where I kind of especially enjoyed that was episode 10 of the series has this Russian spoof called Animaniet. To me, it's just like Chef's Kiss 2020 funny. Like, it jumps right into today's conversations about surveillance and geopolitics in a way that is just masterfully reflective of the moment. And that episode actually ends with this press conference spoof that's just so good. I mean, that is a sketch that took me twice as long to watch, because the whole time there's this ticker at the bottom that's just scrolling spoofy headlines. So I kept pausing and rewinding just to make sure I could catch them and read them all. And I mean, just the way that they so easily reflect where we are. I felt this way kind of even as a kid, like looking back at Animaniacs. And I feel it today that Animaniacs is kind of like SNL, but for a younger demographic. Mm-hmm. It's really spot on as a way to look at where we are.
I will say, I did appreciate when it kind of went back to its roots of a mile a minute jokes, like you can barely keep up. There's one sequence where Dot is determined to make everything cute. And the animation is just really, really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a commentary on this need to make everything cute in this horrible, drab world that we're living in. I just thought it was really fun to watch things get progressively just more over the top. So I loved it when it kind of took like a cultural reference that felt a little bit less specific to like 2020 politics and more just like, this is our culture now. Because to me, I think that's when Animaniacs was always at its best. Even the original version suffered sometimes from lots of really super timely jokes that if you were to watch it as a kid now, you'd have no idea what they are. And some of them are a little bit more timeless. But when it goes to that place of just being super over the top in a more general way, I think is when it excels the most.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've always loved Dot as someone who profoundly identifies with Louise Belcher from Bob's Burgers.
Ooh, yes. Same.
I also looked at Dot and I was like, oh, I was like, this is the seeds of Louise Belcher. They come from here, because Dot is such an interesting character and she's such a mix of like adult and child. And like, I really appreciate that they let Dot be like thirsty as hell. <That's> I'm like, Dot.
Yeah.
Like, that's right. Like, go for Chris Pine. I'm into this for you. Just like a model of female thirst.
Yes.
I didn't even realize that she was that for me at the time. And now looking back, I'm like, bless you, Dot. So important to me.
Yeah. I have to admit, I had a kind of complicated relationship with some of the side characters, because my mom, who I've mentioned on the show before, her actual God-given name is Pinky.
I had a Pinky in my family, too, for the record.
Yes, right?
I feel like it's a Black people thing.
You know, and so but in the 90s, when she would introduce herself, like 1 in 10 people would be like, oh, you're Pinky, where's the brain, huh? You know, thinking they were just the most clever person and they were so original. That has like always kind of stuck with me as having a complicated relationship with them. But I will say in this reboot, from what we've seen, you know, we only have really seen Pinky and the Brain as some of the few characters to have made it into this version. I mean, they do try to introduce some new side characters. There's this Starbucks and Cindy sketch, which I was just like, meh. It did not work for me. There was not much there. I didn't really understand what they were trying to do with that. But it makes me miss Buttons and Mindy and the Good Feathers. And I'm not sure if there are plans to include them at some point, but I will say some branching out and some investment in other characters other than the Warner siblings. But can I have a crumb more of nostalgia? That's all I'm asking for.
Well, on that note, I think we can all agree justice for all the other characters who we have not yet seen on these episodes of Animaniacs, but they could be there. We've only seen five. They've given five to critics beforehand. So tell us what you think about Animaniacs. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it'll be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor StoryPoint Wines, maker of StoryPoint, a wine brand who believes that wine and storytelling are the perfect pair. Much like a good podcast, StoryPoint builds layers of interest to create a premium wine at an affordable price. Discover why StoryPoint received Wine Enthusiast's Best Buy Award. Visit StoryPointWines.com/happyhour to purchase. As a special offer to NPR listeners, shipping is included in your online order of 3 bottles or more.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy? Margaret, tell us what is making you happy this week.
So what is making me happy this week is Karina Longworth's podcast, You Must Remember This, which is this incredibly well-produced and deeply researched podcast about Hollywood history from the 20th century. This summer, she ran a remarkable series on a woman named Polly Platt, who she deems Hollywood's invisible woman. And she is not necessarily someone you would have heard about, but what you have heard about are movies that she had an absolutely monumental role in making excellent. She was Peter Bogdanovich's first wife, and as a creative team, they made his 3 best pictures. They made The Last Picture Show, What's Up, Doc, and Paper Moon. And they did that as a creative team, despite the fact that after The Last Picture Show, Peter Bogdanovich left Polly Platt for Sybil Shepherd, whom she had cast in The Last Picture Show. If you know of Polly Platt, that part is well known because it's this focal point of such classic Hollywood gossip. After that, Polly Platt went on to be a similar kind of creative partner for many, many other noteworthy Hollywood directors and writers, most prominently James L. Brooks. And then she actually played a really important role in Wes Anderson's early career. And this podcast looks at both the work that she did with those men and this weird middle point where she came to Hollywood, where she got where she was without the help of feminism and therefore sort of didn't think feminism was for her or necessary. But you can also see how in the life that she led in those spaces, because there was no narrative for female creative auteurs, there was no space for the kind of expertise and vision she was bringing to all of these projects to really be recognized and understood. So it's incredibly interesting, and your brain will be blown. It's so, so good and so well done.
Thank you, Margaret. I'm always here for a You Must Remember This endorsement. So thank you.
It's the best show.
JC, what is making you happy this week?
So I have 6 words for you. Gave me cookie, got you cookie, which is my favorite line so far from a show that I fully admit I am incredibly late to, but I have just started watching New Girl, and I am so surprised by how incredibly delightful and funny this show is. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really audibly laugh at television shows. I just kind of politely acknowledge, like, that is funny, and then I move on. There are moments of New Girl where I am, like, literally laughing out loud. I'm in the 4th season currently, and while I admit I was completely late to this party, but I'm kind of glad that I was late, because now, being in my 30s, as most of the characters are, I find it relatable on a whole different level than I think I would have if I were in my 20s when I watched it. Not only does it hold up in a way that not all shows from the early 2010s do, but the more I watch it, the more I realize I am Nick Miller. I'm here to be vulnerable with you guys. I hope you will still accept me, but I feel like I'm a tiny bit of a curmudgeon, but like mostly a lovable oaf. I just identify with him so much. So now, I mean, as we are all kind of stuck in the places where we are for an extended period of time, having a ton of New Girls to discover for me for the first time is just making me incredibly happy.
I identify as a just a sun, but a Nick Miller moon, astrologically speaking. He has that box of receipts that he just hides in his closet, and I identify with that too much.
At this point, I have two shoeboxes. So,
too representative.
Like, you know,
absolutely.
Yes.
I can't say I identify with any of them, but I did enjoy that show when it was on. So what's making me happy this week is an offshoot of what we were talking about earlier. And JC, you mentioned this briefly. It is Tiny Toon Adventures, which for me was an even more formative show than Animaniacs was as a kid.
Sure.
I mean, it's also zany, also wacky. It shares a lot of DNA with Animaniacs, and some of the creators of that show also created Animaniacs. And what I love about the show is just, it's similar to Muppet Babies, where they are the younger versions of these well-known entities. Although unlike the Muppet Babies, it's not like a young Kermit and a young Miss Piggy.
Right.
It's Buster Bunny, who is basically the sort of doppelganger of Bugs Bunny. And you also have like Hampton J. Pig, who's like Porky. It's fun. It's weird. There's so many pop culture references, many of which I think still hold up today. There's Steven Spielberg also shows up several times in animated form. And like the old Animaniacs, it is also on Hulu streaming now. So you can go back if it's been a while since you've watched it. Go enjoy it. The one I was just rewatching recently was an episode that was all about the 90s, and it was a season one episode. So the 90s had just started. The show premiered in 1990. And there's one segment about like not smoking. It's like smoking's bad, but it's done in a really funny way and like a non-preachy way, I think. Yeah. So Tiny Toon Adventures, making me happy.
Yeah.
Check it out on Hulu. So that's what's making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations exclusive to the newsletter, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Crafting My Style. Follow JC at TheJCHoward. And you can follow Margaret at Mrs. Friday Next. You can follow editor Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and producer Candace Lim at TheCandaceLim. You can follow producer Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's KATZIF. And Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to you all for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all next week when we'll be talking about the new album from Megan Thee Stallion.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. I just interviewed former President Barack Obama about dealing with falsehoods like birtherism, facing obstruction in Congress, and why he's still hopeful about American democracy. The episode is now in the Fresh Air feed.